From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we continue with our Coastline candidate interviews, and on this edition, we meet the Democrat challenging the Republican incumbent in North Carolina's House District 16, which includes Pender County and the northwest corner of Onslow County. This is the second time that Steve Unger has challenged Chris Millis for the seat. The population of House District 16 is 77% white, 16% of the district is black, and nearly 7% identifies as Hispanic. Among registered voters, 40% are registered Democrats, 35% are registered as Republicans, and 24% are unaffiliated voters. Steve Unger founded Pender Sounds Magazine, which later became the Topsail Voice newspaper. He served as editor and publisher of The Voice until 2002, when he sold it. He now works as the athletic supervisor for the town of Surf City. Steve Unger, welcome to Coastline.
Thanks so much for having me today. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
We invited Chris Millis to join us today. He has not responded to multiple invitations. That means this hour belongs to Steve Unger and to you to ask him questions about the issues that concern you. There is one way to get your question through on this Thursday. Since the phones are co-opted by the pledge drive, we ask that you send questions via email to coastline@whqr.org. Steve Unger, why don't we start by having you tell us a little bit about who you are and why you want this job in the first place.
Well, it all started really the election 6 years ago when I was contacted by state party officials to run. At the time, I had just returned from a position I had in the Outer Banks, and I was in between residences, in between jobs. I said, I really can't do this. And so nobody ran against Chris Millis in the 16th district after Carolyn Justice retired. 2 years later, I waited and waited, talked to party officials, and when at 10 o'clock on the day that the deadline was reached to file and nobody had filed, I drove to Bergaugh and put my hat in the ring. And that was my first challenge against Mr. Millis. I did not win. I only pulled 38% of the vote, but I worked hard and I learned a lot.
Did you learn from that time around?
I learned that without a strong party organization and lots of volunteers and a united effort, that it was very, very difficult to win, especially in an off year. And so I accepted the position as chair of the Democratic Party last year. We had our first convention in several years.
You're talking about the Pender County Democratic Party.
When I ran the first time and I went around to the polling places on election day, Mr. Millis had more family members at the precincts than we had Democratic Party people in Pender and Onslow County. Every time I get to a precinct, I'd say, oh, you must be a Millis. How do you do? And I'd shake hands and I'd look around and there wasn't any Democrats. And it was very disturbing. So when I became chair, one of my goals was to make sure that we had a Democrat at every poll, which we will in Pender County. Debbie Fintech took over as party chair this past year, and we can talk about the role of the blue ballot and what the Democratic Party's done to help promote my candidacy and the candidacy of other Democrats.
How have you done in terms of raising money? Are you able to buy TV ads at this point, print ads?
I have a very low-key campaign. I've actually raised less than $1,000, but I actually have some money set aside for TV. I have a TV commercial made, and I've been able to put out signs, and I've worked very, very strongly through our precinct organizations and through our other parts. Mr. Millis hasn't raised a lot of money, even by state standards, but I'm comfortable with what I've done. One of the things I have is I have another job. Most people who run for office are retired or they're independently wealthy and can put a lot of time into it. And I've got to put time into it around my other job and also being a media consultant.
And so how will you do that? Because right now your full-time job is athletic supervisor for the town of Surf City. Is that correct?
Yes, and I love working for Surf City.
And so if you were elected and you would have to spend, particularly during the long session in Raleigh, would you give up that job?
I would have to resign. I've discussed it with my boss in the past, and I might be able to work part-time for the town, but I could not work full-time. I would give up a great full-time job with superb benefits to serve in Raleigh, and that's a big sacrifice. One of the problems is it is practically a full-time job, but the compensation for it is very, very small, even if you include per diem expenses. So basically only retired people, wealthy people can serve in the legislature. Now,
and so which one of those categories do you fall into?
I'm certainly not wealthy.
So then how would you survive?
Well, I would find another way to keep my head above water. I mean, that's what I'd have to do. This job is important enough. If I win this seat, I mean, I will open an office in our area to serve constituents so they can come meet with me about what we're doing in Raleigh, and I'll probably live there.
And if you won this seat, this would be the first time you'd ever held elected office of any kind.
That's correct. I've enjoyed being involved in politics, and I've enjoyed rebuilding our party and getting the message out. But I have not held elective office. But all I can say, it's fun being involved in politics, and I wish more people would actually get involved. And one of our challenges is getting the millennials involved in the political process.
So, if you were elected, how would you, as a freshman in the minority party, build relationships or go to Raleigh and expect that you could get anything to happen?
Well, you got to go back to the time when Carolyn Justice represented the 16th District. She was a Republican who really, really reached across the party aisles.
She enjoyed a lot of bipartisan support.
She certainly did. She's a personal friend of mine, and the Democrats controlled it at the time, but she knew how to reach across and work with people of all persuasions. In fact, when she was county commissioner, she once ran on a slate that included Democrats and Republicans for county commissioner.
And she's not running. You are. So how would you do that?
Well, the first thing we've got to do as Democrats is take enough House and Senate seats so that we, with a Democratic governor, and I fully expect Roy Cooper to come out ahead, that he would be able to veto measures passed by the legislature. And that's the first step is take back enough seats so that we have a greater competitive balance.
So you're not talking about working across the aisle. You're talking about getting a majority.
Well, realistically, I don't think we can get a majority till at least the next election. But you get enough seats that you can negotiate. And right now, there's no negotiation. The Republicans can go into session in a two-day session, pass HB2, and go bam, 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 and there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. So we need to gain enough seats back, have a Democratic governor, and then we start the dialogue and working across party lines. There are issues where the parties do work across party lines, but there really aren't that many.
And when we come back from this break, we are going to talk about some of those issues and some of the differences that you have with Chris Millis. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews on 91.3 FM. Steve Unger is the Democrat challenging Republican incumbent Chris Millis for his seat in North Carolina's House District 16. And of course, we're taking your questions. The phones are taken with Pledge Drive on this Thursday, but you can email us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're getting to know Steve Unger, who is challenging Chris Millis for his seat in North Carolina's House District 16. Chris Millis is the Republican who's held the seat for two terms and is seeking a third. Mr. Millis has not responded to multiple invitations for equal time, so you have this entire hour to get to know his Democratic challenger, Steve Unger. You can ask your own question of Mr. Unger today by emailing coastline@whqr.org. A political scientist and a pollster from Elon University recently said the unpopularity of HB2, this is House Bill 2, popularly known as the bathroom bill, may actually have a reverse coattail effect on the presidential race, generating a bit of added support for Secretary Hillary Clinton by mobilizing progressive voters to turn out. Steve Unger, how do you feel about HB2, and what are you seeing as you travel around the region?
Well, I personally and professionally oppose it. It's discriminatory. It's costing our state millions and millions and millions of dollars of lost revenue due to events not coming here, including major sports events. For a party that prides itself on being pro-business, this is a big mistake for the Republican Party. It was a reaction to an issue, to a problem that didn't exist. Transsexuals in the bathroom, my gosh, they're at risk. It's basically a phony issue, and nobody's taken the bait in the other states. Even the governor in South Carolina said, "Hey, I'm not touching this one." It is terrible legislation. It's discriminatory, and it needs to be repealed. So that's my stand, and I know, and I think the majority of North Carolinians feel that way. Now, my opponent Chris Millis is a co-sponsor of that legislation, and I know he supports it because at a recent debate we had in Onslow County, he expressed his continuing support for it. I just think we need to take care of it. This is just making us the laughingstock of the nation and hurting our economy.
And when you say take care of it, what do you mean? You're talking about a full repeal?
It needs to be completely repealed. Yeah, I don't see trying to come up with maybe a compromise is possible, but I totally feel that it needs to be repealed. It echoes discrimination, racial discrimination we've had in the past. And North Carolina has been far more progressive in its attitudes. And it's something that we just can't allow to happen.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're talking with Steve Unger. He's the Democrat challenging Republican incumbent Chris Millis for the seat in North Carolina House District 16. And on this Thursday, you can get your question in for Steve Unger by emailing coastline@whqr.org. John writes, how many illegal immigrants currently reside in Pender County, and what impact did those people have on the budget of the county? Specifically, can you speak to the economic impact of the education budget?
Well, I think I know who sent that, and thank you, John. I have no idea how many illegal immigrants we have. I know we've got a hardworking Hispanic population, and the number of Hispanic voters who are citizens has increased dramatically to 7% and will continue to increase in the future. I think the impact of these immigrants has been a very positive one on the economy. I'm friends with many Hispanics and many leaders in the Hispanic community, so I really can't address how many. I don't have a crystal ball in front of me, but I think in the end that immigration has always been good for the United States of America because immigrants have made up what's new, what's exciting, and those willing to work hard and make this country a greater nation.
Is there anything that the state of North Carolina needs to do when it comes to the influx of refugees?
I think we need to be welcome to them. Obviously, refugees have to be vetted. Right now, do you realize that the largest amount of immigrants coming into our country right now are Asians and Indians? We've actually had reverse migration back to Mexico in the last couple of years. So you got to look at the issue in terms of the entire perspective.
Your opponent, Republican Chris Millis, led the charge in the state legislature to do away with film incentives as a tax rebate, despite the fact that he represents a part of the state that benefited tremendously from that tax rebate for film producers. We've watched business in the film industry drop off to next to nothing. Now there's talk of beefing up the grant fund and pursuing TV series because they stay in town longer, therefore spend more money longer. Where do you stand on film incentives? And if you were elected, what would you do in Raleigh on that front?
Well, I've got a sticker on my car that says film equals jobs. And I was a strong advocate the last time I ran to keeping these incentives in place. You can just ask what these incentives do in other states like Georgia, where they've made a tremendous amount of difference and where a lot of my friends in the film industry have gone to keep work. You can't just say it's this business, this film. It's all the extra people who worked in the film industry, all the gaffers, all the people operating cameras, all the extras. It's severely impacted our economy here. There's been several studies. Some studies say that that it aids our economy to the tune of millions of dollars, and there's other studies that say it may cost us. I think it's been very, very good for our area and for Mr. Millis to totally help torpedo something that's helped our area is totally wrong.
So what do you say to someone who says, I don't like to choose favorites and help out certain industries or help out certain companies? That's not capitalism.
Well, all you have to look at is what the other incentives, the incentives we offer to other large businesses that come in. The GEs of the world, South Carolina has been successful in bringing in Mercedes-Benz. So we don't seem to have any problem at offering tax incentives and rebates to big companies. But when it comes to film, for some reason, the film industry was singled out. And those tax incentives really impact on thousands of people in our economy.
Today on the Coastline Candidate Interviews, we're talking with Steve Unger. He's the Democratic challenger to Republican incumbent Chris Millis for the seat in North Carolina House District 16, which encompasses Pender County and a portion of Onslow County. You can ask your own question of Steve Unger by emailing coastline@whqr.org. One of the issues that this Republican-dominated legislature has pushed in the last couple of years is regulatory reform. Is there any part of that general push? And that's, you know, that's a big umbrella. But is there any part of that that you would agree with and support?
I think we need to do things for small businesses. We need to provide incentives. We need to take a look at how we can improve our healthcare situation for owners of small businesses. I was just talking to a friend the other day who is in the private sector, and health insurance costs have risen dramatically. And we're going to look for solutions through Obamacare, perhaps extending it to Medicaid. I think a lot of this so-called reforming regulations is an excuse for hurting our environmental regulations. They talk about drilling off the coast. Mr. Millis has a very poor ranking among environmental organizations. We've got to protect our environment if we're going to have quality for the future. And you can just say, hey, this is so we can save money for businesses. I think that's often used as a smokescreen.
There's always criticism of the current administration and the prevailing party, the majority in Raleigh, by the other party, the minority party. And we've certainly heard of a lot of that this election season. What do you think is going right in Raleigh?
What's going right is I think we're going to take a bunch of seats back. we need to reorder the priorities. I'm glad to see Mr. Millis has obtained financing for the first leg of the Highway 17 bypass. And I give him credit for that, even though I think he was a little late to the table. Sufficient pressure was put on the DOT. And this is a big, big project for our district.
And for those folks who haven't followed that, describe what that is.
Well, it goes back to 1993 when in my newspaper we said, why not a bypass instead of widening the road? And, of course, people said, yeah, what a great idea. And, of course, DOT was up in arms because they hadn't even considered a bypass in their plans. And Sam Hunt, who was head of DOT at the time, said, okay, we'll widen the road and we'll build the bypass. He said this in 1993. And now we're sitting here 22 years later and trying to get traffic around Hampstead and through traffic through and a modern road. And finally, we've accomplished something. And we still need to find funding for the leg between 210 and I-140. But I give him credit for doing that in our area.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're talking with Democrat Steve Unger. He is challenging Republican Representative Chris Millis for the seat in North Carolina House District 16 for the second time. Mr. Millis has not responded to invitations to appear on the show, so this entire edition is your chance to get to know Steve Unger and ask him a question of your own. On this Thursday, you can do that by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. And the voter ID law, this is something that has largely in this state fallen along party lines. Passed in 2013, was struck down by a federal appeals court, described as targeting African Americans with almost surgical precision and imposing cures for problems that do not exist, which as a matter of fact, is the language that you used when you were talking about your opposition to HB2. Yeah. Where do you stand on the voter ID law, and is there anything that we need to do at this point in the state of North Carolina to set things more accurately?
I have totally opposed it because voting is a right, not just a privilege, it's a right. And there are folks out there who can't get IDs. It was designed deliberately to keep folks from being able to vote who might vote for the Democratic Party. This has been done in other places nationwide. It's part of a national Republican strategy, and it was fine-tuned here to keep minorities from voting. One example I can give you is I worked at the YMCA for a number of years and still teach there part-time. I decided I was going to create an ID policy where adult basketball players had to show IDs before I would allow them to play. And I realized
why?
Because I wanted to make sure it was the right player playing, that it wasn't somebody playing that wasn't supposed to be there, that they were like cheating to be there, kind of like what the voter ID people do. It turns out that a lot of them didn't have IDs. A lot of them didn't have driver's licenses. And that kind of opened my eyes. And what are we going to do about the elderly who can't get out of nursing homes or stay at home and can't get another form of ID? And we've disallowed perfectly acceptable forms of IDs. I think the whole thing was designed to keep people from voting, to keep Democrats from voting.
How do you answer then? Governor Pat McCrory says it takes a legitimate state-issued driver's license to be able to buy Sudafed in a drugstore. So why should it be easier to vote?
I've got to show my ID if I want to buy alcohol. So what's the difference? This is a right. It's not a privilege. You can get a gun a lot easier than you can in terms of ID and versus our restrictive voting ID laws. There was simply no reason for it. There's almost no evidence of any cheating. The number of bona fide fraud cases in terms of voting isn't incredibly small. And so instead we create a law that keeps people from voting and discourages them from coming to the polls.
Where do you stand on hydraulic fracturing?
Well, funny you should ask that. I'm against it in North Carolina. I don't think it's necessary. State of New York has banned it. They won't move on. The formations we have in mid-state are like, they might do it, they might not do it. We've already seen in Oklahoma.
What do you mean by that? They might do it, they might not.
Well, the formations we have here aren't as good as the formations in Pennsylvania and West Virginia and other places.
We don't have the same volume of resource there.
No, we have a small area that would be suitable. But look what's happened in Oklahoma, where they've had earthquakes and they've had potential of groundwater pollution in other places. I don't think we need it in North Carolina. We need to protect our environment. We don't need offshore drilling. We don't need sonar testing that could hurt the environment. And I'm so glad that President Obama reversed his stand on this issue.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we have Steve Unger, the Democratic candidate, challenging Republican incumbent Chris Millis for his seat in North Carolina's House District 16, which covers Pender County and the northwest portion of Onslow County. We're taking your questions on this Thursday. After this 90-second break, we'll return for the final segment, your last chance to ask your own question of Steve Unger. You can do that by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Steve Unger is with us today. He is the Democrat challenging Republican Representative Chris Millis for his seat in North Carolina's House District 16, which includes Pender County and part of Onslow County. Mr. Millis has held the seat for two terms and is seeking a third. He's ignored multiple invitations from WHQR to appear on the Coastline Candidate Interviews. So this entire edition is your chance to get to know Steve Unger, his Democratic challenger. And it's your last chance to ask Steve Unger a question on this Thursday. The phone lines are being used by Pledge Central today, but you can email your question to coastline@whqr.org. Steve Unger, how do you think the state legislature has done with teacher pay increases? That's been a big selling point for Republican candidates during this campaign season.
Well, once we were almost dead last, there's been some improvements in that area. But these improvements are overshadowed by trying to get rid of tenure, denying opportunities for folks to teach who were in another area, the ending of programs to promote teachers. We haven't made it any easier for our teachers in our educational system. We don't have enough funding coming from the state level to build schools. The lottery was supposed to be 100% dedicated to education, and I'm glad that now they're not going to pull it in other areas, but that was needed to build new schools. Instead, our property taxes went up 30% in Pender County because the whole amount, practically the whole amount of building new schools is in the backs of the taxpayers. I think our the way we rate teachers and rate schools, it seems like we change it every 3-4 years, and the current system doesn't look any better, or it looks worse than previous systems. And the idea of putting public schools in private hands that are underperforming, I don't agree with that.
You're talking about charter schools.
Well, no, we're talking about underperforming schools, that there's a move afoot among the other party to put them in the hands of a private operator who would try to turn around the school program. Charter schools, they are supposedly another kind of public school, but they drain the resources from our traditional public schools. I think private schools ought to be able to succeed on their own merits, and I do not favor further expansion of charter schools.
But the idea behind charter schools was that they would be something of a laboratory setting where teachers and administrators could try new teaching techniques and pull out the best, and then those best practices would be co-opted by the rest of the traditional public school system. Is that not the idea behind them?
It sounds like a great idea, but last year in Michigan, they did a 20-year study of the performance of charter schools, and they showed that the biggest success of charter schools was enriching the operators, that the performance of charter schools was essentially no better, no worse than that of traditional public schools. Why are we going to sink all these resources into a second school system instead of improving our current school system?
You mentioned the Pender County bypass, and you talked about having been involved and aware of that issue since the late 90s.
Early 90s.
Okay, the early 90s. So transportation is obviously something that's important to you. What else would you like to see for this area? How does this area need to improve along those lines?
Transportation infrastructure, looking ahead at the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years, really ought to be the number one issue. We need to reestablish that rail link that was taken out between Castlehaine and Rose Hill. That's very important to my district. Highway 53 was supposed to have a bypass that kind of drifted away. That needs to be relooked at, and that would route heavy traffic and trucks around Berghoff, for instance. The entire corridor, I know we've talked about another river crossing down here across the Cape Fear River. Transportation issues need to be looked at, not just by one county, but they need to be looked at regionally. We need to plan for the future. We need to plan open spaces. We need to plan for parks. We need to plan for our schools to be able to build them. We need to look at what kind of area we're going to leave for our children in the future, because we know one thing is people are going to keep coming here. The population of Pender County is going to double in the next 15 years, and it's doubled in the last 20 years. And we got to be prepared for this as public servants and do a good job to leave it to our children and grandchildren.
Why do you think a very conservative Republican has been elected two terms in a row to this House seat in District 16, and Pender County, or actually the district itself, which includes this northwestern corner of Onslow County, has a majority of registered Democrats? What does that say about the population there?
Well, the first thing is that there are some folks who are still registered as Democrats, but they don't vote Democrat anymore. Some of them are now unaffiliated, and if you look at the what's going on is that unaffiliated people tend to vote more Republican than they vote Democrat. So those numbers aren't necessarily indicative of where we are. The other thing is, when District 16 was created, that was after a Supreme Court decision where Pender County had to be left alone as a district and not chopped up into six pieces. District 16 included portions of Castlehaine, Ogden, other parts that were more Democratic, and it was a better opportunity for a Democrat to be elected. In fact, the first time Carolyn Justice won, it was a very close election. During the redistricting, the Republicans included precincts in Onslow County and that are heavily Republican. And I love the folks up there, and I'll spend some time in Richlands, but it makes it far harder for a Democrat to be elected. And as you know, the courts have decided that our districts are unconstitutional for the state House and Senate, and they're going to need to be redrawn. Now the question is, will there be a special election after they redraw them? I don't know. That was raised today, and I hadn't heard of that thing before, so I guess I'm going to have to research that.
When you look at the way the votes have fallen, and we've talked about this before with a political scientist very recently, this is one of the more polarized times that we've seen, particularly in legislatures and on Capitol Hill. We just see votes happening along party lines. How do you expect to and join people to vote for the person and not necessarily the party? Are you only going to be able to count on Democratic voters in this election?
If I only count on Democratic voters, I'm not going to win. However, the party is important. The Democratic Party in this state uses something called the Blue Ballot Initiative that actually came from Randy Voller, our previous chair, and where it's been initiated, it's worked very well. In fact, I'm holding one in my hands right now for to show you. In the most recent election this past spring, Michael Morgan, who's running for NC Supreme Court Associate Justice, these are nonpartisan elections for judges, but he was supported by the Democratic Party. And for the first time in 15 years, we won a victory statewide where he pulled more votes than his opponents did in Pender County. So it's, like I said, it's turning Pender County purple. And I think partisanship is not necessarily a bad thing. I think millennials are loath to necessarily join one party or the other. And we see the future, you know, with the Bernie movement this past spring on what's going to happen. And we need to make our party relevant, and we need to make our issues relevant to a younger generation.
Do you support your party's candidate for president?
Oh, absolutely. Hillary is easily the best choice. She has tremendous amount of experience. She's been in government. She's worked hard. She's been in a variety of roles. I think if you just separate everything else, if you came in from outer space and you looked at two candidates and you said, this person's qualified or is this person qualified, that she certainly comes out way ahead.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. Today we're talking with Steve Unger. He's the Democrat challenging Republican incumbent Chris Millis for the seat in North Carolina House District 16, which encompasses Pender County and a portion of Onslow County. You have just a few minutes left to get your question in on this Thursday for Mr. Unger. You can do that by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. So let's say that you are elected. You go to Raleigh. And now it's 2 years later, you're finishing up your term. What has changed? What kinds of laws have been passed? What policy has changed? And how does this district, how has it benefited from your time?
We're still going to be a minority party. So the part of it is fighting the good fight, looking for compromises, looking for areas that the two parties can work together.
What are some of those areas?
I think we need to look to work together on education. We need to look to work together on the environment. We need to look to find ways of saving money for small businesses and rewriting tax codes and making taxes more equitable. There are areas where we can find common agreement.
How would you make taxes more equitable?
I can't give you real specifics. There's areas that I don't know as much about that I'll have to learn more about, but I do know that the tax burden locally on folks who own property, property taxes is extreme. And I know personally, my property taxes after the local school, and I supported the school bond, but gosh, I'm paying $150, $200 more a month to pay my mortgage. So we need to take a look at reforming the tax system. And I'm certainly open to ideas from people and others to do that.
If you were elected, what are you most concerned about? What would be the biggest learning curve for you, the biggest challenge?
Oh, gosh. When you go in office, there's tons of challenges. You have to defer and learn from people who know more than you. My biggest challenge is going to be to earn a living on the side while I occupy the seat and serve the people.
So should potential constituents be concerned that would be a focus for you?
No, I think that's true for anybody who's coming into office. We have to have new people coming into office every election. We need new blood in Raleigh. We need new blood at the local level, at the county commissioner level, at the state, at running for municipal office. So I don't think it's a concern. I've always been a fast learner, and I've always been fascinated by politics since I was young. I worked in the McGovern campaign. So I've been around a while, and I would enjoy doing this as a public service to serving the people. Mr. Millis has served two terms. The Republicans talk about term limits. I guess I should ask him what he feels about term limits.
Where do you see the greatest opportunities for economic growth in North Carolina, and how would you help to facilitate that growth as a state legislator?
It's information technology. It's finding ways of following our computer revolution, education. It's certainly not in textiles. You got to take a look at some states that have already transformed, places like Massachusetts and others. Our places like the Research Triangle, the Raleigh area, the Charlotte area, these are vibrant metro areas, and Wilmington is right there too. We've got to create opportunities in rural areas too. We've got to look at not just building more hog farms. We've got to find ways of helping folks statewide and creating economic opportunities statewide.
Is there a racial divide in North Carolina that the state legislature has any responsibility in helping to solve, helping to bridge?
There is a racial divide. I'm not sure what the answers are, except that right now most of our legislatures are Republican. There's far more Caucasians than there are minorities. I think their sensitivity is important. That we need to also look at the growing ascendancy of Hispanics as part of our permanent population, as we have more and more Hispanic citizens. The big Hispanic migration here came in the 90s with the hurricanes, and they've stayed. They've been part of our economy, and they are going to be a major portion of our political system in the future. So I think we're talking about tolerance of across racial divides, pulling more women into politics and making a difference. You know, I'm a believer in the fact that that all segments of society need to be represented, and we need to all work together.
That's this edition of Coastline. Steve Unger, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rachel. It's been a pleasure.
Remember, one-stop voting begins October 20th. October 14th is the deadline to register to vote in the November 8th election. For our Thursday listeners, that is tomorrow. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or get the podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.